Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Right. But the Italian for friend is, I guess, what we're looking for. But anyway, we got to get out of here or we'll screw up the timing again. So we'll see you on the other side, John. Thanks again, Peter. And in the meantime, here's the late, great Lowell George reminding you to...
This is a top to, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see, the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, oh, 11,
and most of
11,
and then amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes, you know, be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up, all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show right here on the Horn. It's Boxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Boxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366, or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
All right, everybody, welcome aboard Fox Up here for a, what is it, Wednesday night, Thursday morning, or Thursday afternoon, all depending on where you reside on this beautiful blue marble, such that it still is. And we're going to kind of just pick up from where we got lost last night due to the weather. Boy, it's been interesting trying to stay on air lately. If it's not the power going down in West Virginia, it's John destroying his equipment. But anyway, the place is a bit chaotic in the studio here as I went ripping apart, having to go find my soldering iron, which I haven't needed in quite a while. And I've got about a square meter and a half in which to walk that I'm not stepping on things. Because I tore the place apart going, So hopefully it'll all kind of hang on. It should hang on. But last night, the track of the day was so rudely interrupted by, West Virginia's power company and the weather. So we're going to pick up where we were last night and get actually through this track. And the track last night, being the track tonight, is a track called Traveler from a gentleman by the name of Talvin Singh. He's a tabla player. Was into punk rock as a kid and really melds Eastern and Western influence into an amazing tapestry of sound. And Yeah, we only got about halfway through it last night, and I know a bunch of people were digging what they heard, so we'll make up for that tonight. And, you know, as I mentioned last night, we didn't quite get to that point before we had to jump ship last night. In the last third of this 10-minute piece of music, you'll see, you'll hear this, there's this string line that I just love. It's just beautiful. And it's really unique. It's just one of the, and whether they're, I don't know if they're real strings or whether they're samples, whatever they are, they're, you know, just really, really, really rich. So without further ado, Mr. Talvin Singh from the album OK with Traveler. Roll it, Bob. is that just some of the most amazingly rich and beautiful, just, I don't know, orchestration, everything. It just does all these, it's just gorgeous. That string section, it just kills me every time. But we got to go to the phone. See, we're picking up right where we left off last night. Our good friend, David from Maine, who was on the line last night, is back on the line tonight. How you going, David? Welcome to the program.
I've been waiting all this time, John. I'm kind of tired from holding my ears to the phone.
You've been on hold since last night.
Yeah.
What can I do for you today?
Oh, man. You know, I really think that's cool that you played Summer Talvin. I don't know his solo work, but I'm very familiar with his remixes and stuff like that. I think he's one of the best percussionists in London. He clearly understands he clearly understands the different cultures going on in there, and he really did. He really is the ambassador of bringing the Indian movement to London. One of the primary people who was probably networked, I don't know, for how many years to just be able to get the album and get like the Mercury Prize and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I mean, in something like 25 years, there's only been 3 solo records. And when he came back, you know, from studying tabla for a year, the traditionalists in England didn't think he was traditional enough, so they had no time for him. But that's usually par for the course, isn't it? Really good people that kind of embrace more than just a fixed, you know, genre, which he obviously just embraces everything. And so the traditionalists in the UK went, nah, we won't have you.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Mercury, since it is, I don't know if he was on the Mercury label, but I'm guessing maybe that's why they hand out the Mercury Prize to Mercury artists. I don't know.
I have no idea.
I know, I have no idea either. It's a London thing. But the three big names that come to mind to me are Four Hero, Ronnie Size Represent, and Goldie, and the Metalheads label. Those were the three big dons. And the little bit of influence you heard in the beginning was clearly based on, probably inspired by what Four Hero was doing. And it took a little time for Four Hero to pop, but now they're all over London. And, yeah, so if you ever get a chance, you should check out the Four Hero album with 2 Pages. And they're a pretty amazing group. They have a lot of Earth consciousness to them. And at the same time, they're really into aliens. and another thing that's really great about them is they have a wicked drummer, a wicked live drummer, but at the same time, they also have, they're amazing drum programmers too, and they have great string orchestrations. There's a song called Loveless. John, if you play it on the air, I swear to you, people will be calling in and they'll be going, holy cow, what the, who the hell is that? Because Ursula Rucker, who's a poet, she takes the position of being Mother Earth. You hear the string section come in, and then she talks about how she's going to wreak vengeance on humanity. And she takes it through, like, verse after verse. To me, Ursula Rucker, I'll drop his name again. I'll be that whore. Ursula Rucker is like Saul Williams.
It's like what? Say again?
I said Ursula Rucker is like Saul Williams. She's that amazing as a poet.
Oh, right. Okay. All right. Now you've really got my attention.
Yeah. I mean, you know what I'll do? Since you don't have that, since I know you're running on fumes and you don't have that much time for all the projects you have, you're like the Rick Rubin of Australia.
I wouldn't quite put it that way, but I try.
Okay. Well, you're into the earth. Here's how I see it. I kind of generalize. You're into the earth. You could be into yoga, you definitely are into the environment, and you're into music. That to me puts you in the Rick Rubin category.
I'll wear that.
Alright, yeah, I mean, you got to, I mean. So, yeah, wow. I was just thinking about, like, all of the stuff that happened today. I listened to Bob, and in case you couldn't tell, people, we're transitioning now. And I was just listening to it, and I don't know, John. I don't see anything on the horizon for a dramatic change anytime in the near future when it comes to America. I don't know what to tell you, but over here, I'm seeing signs of my city totally going into darkness. They're doing the mistake where they brought into too many. I mean, I'm not going to name the city, but it's because I don't want to be in a concentration camp. But no, they brought in too many chain stores around here, and they're not able to sustain this community. And they won't be able, they won't stay around as soon as people don't have any money or they don't have any resources to spend, or the credit is hanging around their neck, finally does them in. I noticed a lot of stores are just getting boarded up, simply. Everybody stopped trying to be the new owners of this store. And that's kind of what I see going in that direction. Meanwhile, I see a brand new city hall across, I'm right across from City Hall, right?
Yeah,
that's like a castle.
The tax income's fine. But the rest of the community is hurting, and I mean this rings to something that I've spoken about, you know, numerous times. You know, this idea where, you know, everybody comes in, you know, the Wally Worlds and the Starbucks and all these end up buying out all the local businesses. So then all the profit ends up going out of the community, with reduced wages coming back into the community, and after you destroy all the local business, there's nothing left, and there's no, you know, these grand massive corporations don't have any loyalty to the community. So, you know, if that store is just not making money, they're going to just piss off and leave,
right,
and leave a vacuum. And where a local shop owner, that is their community, that is their livelihood, that is their family business, and they're going to do what it takes to keep that business afloat, which ends up, you know, all the profit that they make stays in the community, you know, all that kind of thing. I was one of the many that, you know, kind of jumped up and down and danced around the room when I heard about Starbucks having to close all those places all over the United States a couple weeks ago. And, you know, I feel for the people that lost their jobs, but what I'm hoping is that, you know, some local person will open up a local coffee shop and hire people, and probably get a better wage, and probably keep more of the money in the local economy. We always talk about the grand large economy. We never talk about the micro economy, which I sometimes think is even more important than the macro economy.
Mm. Yeah, I agree too, because it adds up to one big picture in the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I do. My mom did tell me a new trend that I wasn't aware of. Apparently, the new thing around here is increasing is stealing bikes. so at least they're getting a workout on bicycles.
They're stealing bikes?
Yeah, they're stealing bikes. That's the only thing that's doing good around here is the bike shop, and maybe the And maybe City Hall itself. I mean, that's pretty much that's my report on Maine for you people.
Well, it's pretty scary, David.
Yeah.
You know, it really is just frightening. You know, the wiretap thing. I've got, you know, from last night, the story keyed up about, you know, Cheney removing all of the health implications of global warming from any of the reports from the U.S. government, you know, and you see these things where they're just constantly wanting to hide the truth from you as they profiteer. No wonder we don't get anywhere, no matter how much we scream, no matter how many people we turn around and have go, hey, this really is an issue, when you have the Vice President of the United States with such vested interest that he'll strip the facts away from a report to hide the truth from the American people. We're in some serious shit.
Hartman said something pretty profound. He said, I don't believe we're in the phase of an industrial military complex. I believe we're in the phase of an industrial government complex where it all needs to sustain itself by being utterly corrupt and it can't look back. And that's how it continues to sustain itself and continues to thrive, but at the same time continue to poison literally the well in which we drink from.
It's unbelievably shocking, you know. We're down here. We're in the midst of gearing up for a proposed, you know, carbon trade and cap system. And just a few days ago, the 600-page draft report on the basic layouts of what would be the system has come out. And, you know, our new Labor government, you know, warts and all, is still really focusing on the climate change issue. Well, immediately we have the opposition going, yeah, it's a good idea, but let's not move too quick. Let's not move too fast. And now they're doing all the economic scare tactic stuff while people are still reading the report. I'm still working on getting through it. I mean, 600 pages. It's in some pretty serious detail. But Professor Garneau, the guy who headed the report, his statement I think really says it all. The issue of climate change policy is diabolical.
I tend to think that the whole climate change, the whole global warming thing, it became such a frame. I heard so many people who would tell me, even just down the street, I wouldn't even mention it, and they would say, like, if there was a day that was really cold, they didn't understand the concept of global warming. If it was a day that was really cold, and it was supposed to be cold, they'd say, global warming, my ass.
And yeah, you know, yeah.
This is the problem that we have. I mean, even my friend who I consider really, really intelligent in a lot of different areas, really, knows how to, sell, materials and do business. But even he has fallen for this just complete psyop of the environment. And I keep telling myself, I say, you know, you should have come strong with that, and we shouldn't have said global warming. We probably should have said global poisoning, and if we couldn't have gotten away with that, then we should have probably said global tainting. Because John, to tell you the truth, I'd rather have a message that, hey, we're tainting the globe by doing this, and here's how. I mean, when you talk about temperatures, I hate to say this, but seriously, when you talk about temperatures, you're going to get that moment where someone says, see, I told you so. But when you talk about...
Yeah.
And you know, go ahead.
I understand where you are, and I run into this myself. You know, at the moment we're having one of the coolest winters in recent memory here in Australia, and yes, there are going to be people that will say, you know, look, it's kind of cool. So much for global warming, and then you actually have to sit them down and say, okay, I'm going to give you a little bit more information so you understand, right?
Yeah.
For the last 7 years, we have been in an El Nino phase, which is the hot and dry. For the first time in 7 years, we are having a La Nina, which is the cooler, wetter one. And as global warming intensifies, the extremes become more intense. So yes, your heat waves will be longer, more often, hotter. But when you have colder periods, it's going to end up being more extreme in shorter bouts,
mm-hmm.
because of how much more potential energy we're pumping into the intertwined system that is the entire ecosphere. So we're pumping more energy in there. And, you know, the Earth's climate is this constant fight trying to find temperature and pressure balance. But because, you know, but it never will balance itself out because the Earth is spinning, different parts are heating up throughout the day, things are going to change. But it's constantly in this thing where the hot and the cold are trying to transfer their heat to come into balance. So if you put more total energy in, your extreme points are going to go even further. And these are the feedback loops that we're dealing with. So, yeah, and I see, I think with the people that you're talking about, David, I think you're dealing in a, I often wonder, does this concept that we have poisoned or tainted our planet so badly, and the changes that are going to be necessary actually do cause some pain for everyone, that there are people that have been living so blindly that they cannot accept the fact that it's their very lifestyle that has set up this situation, not just theirs, but the generations that preceded, and they're just walling it off. It's just too big. It's too big for them to deal with.
I think also, John, what you just said, that it would lose them after the first sentence.
Because, oh, I know. And usually my response is, just hang on a little bit. You might learn something.
Yeah.
And I don't have time for you know, ass-kissing these people. I really don't.
Yeah.
Because I'll say, you know, you want the reports? I can give them to you. You can read what I have read, the actual science, not the talking heads. Not the paid bullshit artists that are the same guys that were paid to say that tobacco wasn't addictive. I mean, because we know it's the same foundations, all renamed, backed by the same people, out to confuse the issue. And I hate the fact that they constantly use the idea that we don't know for certain all the impacts, that we shouldn't act. And that's just a joke.
Recently, I've been getting the answer back. Whenever I tell them about the problems with the environment, they say, do you think our leaders will follow these policies? And I have to be honest with them. I don't think so, no. No, I think they will be, and that's another problem too, because again, it has to do with the, do as I say, not do as I do. And I don't know how you feel about it, but yeah, I can see our whole entire country being based on being green, but at the same time, the people in D.C., they're not going to be green. They're going to do what they've always done. And to me, that's one of those things where I'm like, yeah, I guess in some ways, if our system, if our government leaders are complete hypocrites, even regarding this, that kind of damages us in a big way too.
No doubt. One of the things that I think will be interesting, depending on how long the United States continues to, you know, stay out of the international effort, we're going to soon see a time as, you know, the EU has been, you know, test driving a carbon cap and trade system. It's not perfect. It hasn't exactly worked, but it is a work in progress, and they're working to tweak it to try and make it work, and it's the best thing that's happened so far, and this is why the whole planet has to get together on this and everyone share their research and share their technology so that we can, you know, make some serious moves. Now, one of the things that we're going to see happen probably in the next 2 years, as the EU, Australia, and other nations start actually taking on some of the responsibility to cut back on emissions, actually charge for carbon output. So, like, if you pollute, you pay. I think that this is not a hard thing to justify. But some of what's been talked about in the EU, they're planning on actually adding tariffs to goods being imported from countries that aren't part of the World Environmental Agreement. So the time will come that U.S. goods will be priced out of the market because they're not playing ball.
How strong do you think the regulation will be if we start moving more toward a green direction? Because that's another question I get. And seriously, that's something a lot of people have to think about, because when it comes down with businesses, we see how people get crazy. They do. They do get crazy with regulation in a lot of different areas. And then once we put those regulations down, I don't know, it's like people become a fiend and they just start regulating everything. And I don't know. It's a tough issue, but I don't think America is designed, will be designed, or is culturally would get behind so many, like, regulation after regulation after regulation, especially when it comes to small businesses. That's another concern my friends have.
They're valid concerns, but again, I go to that is, you know, thinking that is way too short term.
Yeah.
Because we're dealing with something larger, and this is really what the battle of ideas is about, is getting people that really don't get how serious this is and what a mess we've made. And the fact that just taking carbon, the carbon cycle is like, 50 to 100 years. So the carbon that we have in the atmosphere now is built up from, the American and the European Industrial Revolution. So the problem at the moment is mostly, and I mean mostly, from the Western world. But we have certain people that say, India, China. They keep screaming about India, China. But India and China are new to the problem. And I think all the nations that have been doing the most damage need to jump on board first. And if the United States put its resources and its money behind actually helping to develop the new green grid, the whole thing would move so much faster, because you cannot deny the resource capability of the United States when it actually focuses on something. It was Franken back when he was on Air America Radio. He was saying that, we need a president to take on the environment like, Kennedy did getting to the moon. Making it an American task, making it a national cause, saying in 10 years we're going to have this. Because when we put our nose to the grindstone and focus on something, America can do amazing things. But it's the fact that we don't even try, and we just keep ignoring the problem.
I'm in complete agreement with you, and I think I can't say any more on that that issue. I just want to say one more thing. I think it's of note to mention. Dave Galley passed away. He was in the band Trapeze, and he was also the guitarist for Whitesnake. What's that?
Right. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
When did this happen?
He passed away last week of cancer, esophagus cancer. But what was really good, not about the cancer, was the fact that he knew he was dying. So he got to say to everyone in the last month a proper farewell. Of course, a lot of people don't know the name Dave Galley, but Trapeze is probably one of the most influential and inspiring hard rock trios. Not to mention that was John Bonham's favorite band, in case people didn't know. Trapeze was led on vocals by, I believe on the second album into the third album, by Glenn Hughes. And then Mel Galley and Glenn left. They left Trapeze, and then they joined Whitesnake. And that was when Glenn Hughes and David Coverdale both were the lead vocalists for Deep Purple.
Right. Oh, that's going back a little bit.
Right. So if you get a chance, John, you might. I'll send you something. I'll send you something off the Trapeze, so people can get an idea of what kind of guitarist Mel was. The reason why so many people were in awe, not including like Clapton, Jimmy Page, Pete Townsend, just the whole gamut of people in London. Even though they didn't like completely blow up over in London, they did play their records and they did play club gigs. And one interesting fun tidbit about Mel Galley is the fact that he had an accident while he was playing with White Snake, and it it mangled his hand, so he couldn't properly play it. So what he did was he went in for surgery, and he had this like claw attachment made for his hand so he could play guitar again. And then, meanwhile, what's that?
I said, no kidding. I've never heard this.
Yeah, and then so after that, he would do a lot of trapeze gigs, and he would keep the memory of trapeze alive. And then, you know, during the 80s, that's when Glenn Hughes really hit the wall. And then they finally, you know, linked up and did some shows together or something. But, yeah, trapeze to me, and I don't say this lightly, people, is probably one of the greatest power trios. They would be, if you had a double bill of Trapeze and Cream, probably both would be congratulating themselves after the gig because the musicianship is crazy. I mean, Glenn Hughes is like a tremendous bassist, tremendous vocalist. He's got over four octaves. I'm not knocking Robert Plant, but Glenn Hughes never got his daps when it came to the hard rock world when it came to vocals. I mean, he even shocked the hell out of Stevie Wonder when he was recording songs in the Key of Life, and they were recording the Deep Purple album in the next studio. So, you know, Trapeze does have that history. Mel Galley and pretty, if you get a chance, people, you can probably check them out on MySpace. You go to the Trapeze and check out some of the songs and see how great of a guitarist Mel is. Because I really think the guy deserves his due. And I hope Trapeze makes it in the, if they have one, a British Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So, yeah, if you get a chance, John, it would probably be good for you to play something by Trapeze featuring some tasty guitar work by Mel.
Right on, because I really like that older era White Snake stuff.
Yeah.
When it became the Coverdale Project, not so much at the time.
Yeah.
I thought that album was really great, and some of my favorite players were on it. But it started to become a little bit too pompous, and you know, my girlfriend is a hood ornament, and I kind of got.
I understand.
But I mean, Coverdale,
yeah.
Hell of a set of pipes. Hell of a set of pipes. There's no doubt.
but like I said, if people don't know who Glenn Hughes is, I mean, he has quite the history from playing with Pat Thrall to Deep Purple. He did a stint for Black Sabbath. He was also on the single KLF, What Time Is Love. He was on one of the KLF singles, and that was a dance, trance, minimal, anarchist type group who, well, you know what, John? You'd have to do a whole special on KLF someday. I mean, they're insane. What's that?
I said I probably could. And before you go, I don't know if you caught this yesterday. You've been hearing us talk about this World Youth Day thing with the Pope coming to Sydney. I've been talking about this. There's, you know, all these pilgrims and whatnot coming. Well, a friend of mine who is working as a sound engineer on the biggest venue.
Mm-hmm.
Used Jim White's "If Jesus Drove a Motorhome" in a loop for a few hours to ring out his delay speakers that go for 2.5 kilometers through the city.
I think I have the perfect line to end this. Here it comes. Dramatic pause. The Pope. If I was the sound man in one of those in the speakers, you know what I would put on there?
What?
Barnes and Barnes fish heads. Thank you. Good night.
Right on, David. Always good to hear from you. And send me some stuff, and we'll do something on all that very, very shortly.
No problem.
And
I'll send you some trapeze stuff later.
All right, man. And that was our good friend David from Maine, as usual. You know, play something interesting musically. And who's on the line but our good friend David? All right. We're kind of getting a little bit up on the end of things, but I was really, you know, David was mentioning, you know, our federal government's just not going to pull their finger out soon enough to actually make moves on climate change, global warming.
Yeah.
However you term it. Hold on a second. I got to untangle my mic stand from the pile of crap on the floor. Hold on. That's better. All right. But, you know, I've covered a bunch of stories where states and city governments are taking it on themselves to do what the federal government's not doing. And bloody New York City are going to spend billions to cut greenhouse gases. Now, this is from Reuters. And it says, New York City will spend $2.3 billion to cut greenhouse gas emissions from municipal buildings and operations by 30% in 30 years, Mayor said Mr. Bloomberg on Monday. The city aims to cut 1.68 million metric tons of carbon dioxide equivalents a year from 2006 levels by 2017, with measures ranging from improved heating and cooling systems to fixing methane leaks at water treatment plants and using that gas to run electric generation equipment. Hey, there's a concept. Capture and utilize. Ah, I dig it. Anyway, the city is doing its part. I hope the private sector follows our example and finds conservation savings on their own, Bloomberg said in a statement. The city's government consumes about 6.5% of the city's total energy use and 10% of its peak electricity demand. It's a cost that, as we know, is likely to grow as energy prices never seem to stop climbing, Bloomberg said at a news conference, saying he believes the city can achieve the result with existing technology. Bloomberg said the city should break even on its investment on an annual cash flow basis by 2013. Okay, so they're going to actually break even before they even get to the finish line. Okay, so they you know, and Bloomberg's not a dumb guy. I mean, the guy does know how to handle numbers. So, and he says, by 2015, we project we will have saved more on our energy bills than we will have to spend on all our planned investments to that point, Deputy Mayor Ed Schuyler said. The program will partly be funded with 10% of the city's energy budget, about $100 million in the current fiscal year. Improving heating, cooling, and ventilation systems in city buildings will be used to accomplish 57% of total reductions, Bloomberg said in a statement. Loading next page. Emissions at firehouses, police precincts, offices, courthouses, and sanitation garages will also be reduced via repairs ranging from leaky pipes and broken windows to inefficient pumps, along with correcting wasteful systems. See, look at this. They're gonna do all this by just cleaning up their act. Another 17% of the reductions will come at water plants that treat sewage and stormwater runoff by fixing methane leaks and using that gas to run electric generation equipment. Other steps include buying more vehicles that get better gas mileage, and Bloomberg, who jests with reporters about replacing the light bulbs in his Upper East Side townhouse with more efficient ones, plans to do the same with streetlights. Asked how much he could accomplish before his second term and last four-year term ends, Bloomberg noted he only had 542 days left to serve. You'll be living here, you'll be breathing the air, and it'll be your children who will suffer. If you believe this is the right way to go, you'll have to pressure whoever so they continue on. New York City has already committed $900 million for the program, and it spent $80 million in the previous budget. The mayor also hopes to tap federal and state dollars, private foundations, and so-called energy performance contracts. The program puts in place one of the independent mayor's so-called Play NYC initiatives, a series of green proposals to manage the city's expected growth in the next few decades. His best-known proposal, programmed to fight gridlock by imposing fees on drivers during peak hours in parts of Manhattan, was killed by the legislature. Now, they've been doing this kind of thing in London, and it's been a huge hit. Maybe not with drivers, but, like, you know, with people that live in the city. Noting the Metropolitan Transportation Authority, the state agency that runs the subways, buses, and commuter trains, faces shortfalls in its capital and operating budgets. Bloomberg said he was still optimistic the state will enact an economic disincentive for drivers that will pay for mass transit. Hey, sounds like Bloomberg's got a bit of a clue. You know, and he's one of those, like, business dudes. Because, you know, a whole lot of big business. I mean, they've been screaming here for a couple of years in Australia that, you know, the government needs to lead on the issue so that business knows how to invest. And, you know, and I've heard this from many different heads of corporations in Australia, where they say, look, start the cap and trade system, set your price for carbon so we can plan. Let us plan. And it seems completely reasonable to me. You know, this is not, private enterprise is not going to fix the problem, but they can be part of the solution. However, we need to have central leadership on the issue. So, you know, but we're seeing a lot more of this. I mean, you know, Salt Lake City, Utah has done amazing things. Amazing things. Gene sent me another story where someone's come up with, has discovered that when rain falls on certain types of plastic, it can create enough energy to power low voltage devices. And Gene in his email said something about Oregon needed to get that in Oregon because of the massive amounts of rain that they have. So, you know, it's just everyone's got to get involved. See, this is the thing, you know, like David was saying, you know, he's worried about small business and that and the other thing. This is something that everyone has to realize that's going to hurt everybody, right? No one is sheltered from the issue. We all have to wear it. So, you know, I kind of reckon that the extra that we pay for power here, so that we're on 100% renewables, is probably close to what the increase in cost of power would be under a complete umbrellaed system. So, I mean, I'm already doing it. I've gotten, you know, and I'm not the only one. So part of me says, why should I be wearing the burden when no one else seems to be wearing the burden? So I think everyone should wear the burden. And I mean everyone. Because we're all at fault for it. All that crap that we buy that we don't need is part of the problem. Being stuck in gridlock every day. Watching the traffic reports here just always freaks me out. Gail and I were saying it last night. There was a water main break not too far from us, which just caused traffic chaos bloody everywhere. Gail says something to me like, why do these people do this to themselves every day? Why? Are they, you know, petrol's so expensive. We just hit $1.74 a liter yesterday. I mean, that's insane. We're starting to get closer and closer to $7 a gallon in relative terms to the United States. And people are freaking out. People are freaking out. And, again, we keep having the wrong conversations. We keep talking about, oh, we got to find more oil. We got to do this. We got to do that. And ignoring the fact that we can't produce it any faster, no matter how many more, you know, seams of oil we find. We just can't create any more than we are now. We can't turn it over. We can't refine it. So, you know, I mean, it's, you know, people talk about, oh, this is going to hurt. Look, you're running on something finite. The longer you stay on it, the worse it's going to get for you. It's time to get off of the finite resource and do something different. And I'm being informed we're running out of time. All right, folks, thanks for tuning in today. We actually got through an entire show without the power going down or, you know, me breaking equipment. So that's a good thing. thanks to Bob Kincaid for producing tonight. Thanks to Scott Berry at B1 Ladder Productions for the music. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. You too can be part of the resolution to mountaintop removal mining. Sorry, I lost my plot. Anyway, folks, thanks for being with us today. As we say on Fox Stuff, be good, be green.
We'll see you tomorrow.
And the sign said, long-haired freaky people need not apply. So I took my hair up under my hat, and I went in to ask him why. He said, you look like a fine, upstanding young man. I think you do. So I took off my hat, I said, imagine that. Cut me, working for you. Oh, sign, sign, everywhere a sign. Blocking out the scenery, breaking my mind. Do this, don't do that, can't you read the sign? The sign said anybody caught trespassing would be shot on sight. So I jumped on the fence and I yelled at the house, hey, what gives you the right to put up a fence to keep me out or to keep Mother Nature in? If God was here, he'd tell you to your face, man, you're some kind of sinner. Sign, sign, everywhere a sign. Blocking out the scenery, breaking my mind. Do this, don't do that, can't you read the sign? Now, you, mister, can't you read? You've got to have a shirt and tie to get a seat. Membership card to get.